You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
You are listening to Claret and Blue, an Aston Villa podcast brought to you by Birmingham Live. Welcome back to the Claret and Blue podcast. My name is Dan Rowlands and I'm joined, as always, after a match for the post-match debrief with Matt Kendrick. I'm giddy with excitement. Aston Villa have ended their four-game winless, that's the word. Just explaining, before we came on, I'm all over the place. We'll get to that in a second. Aston Villa won at Goodison Park. Steven Gerrard sticking his tongue out to the away end and giving it the big one to the cameras. Absolutely love it, don't we?
Oh, brilliant. It was. I think it goes down in the, very cliche, but goes down in the file marked, you know, classic away performance.
Yeah.
Doesn't it really? You know, it was, I think it was, I was on an Everton post, loaned out to an Everton podcast yesterday. There's a colleague of mine, Matt, who's a big Evertonian. And I thought I'd jinxed it for us because I said to him, I can't see us losing. I can't see us going there.
I said
there
that
losing.
Before kickoff today, weirdly, at home. I said, oh, we won't lose today. We'll be all right somehow.
I said, I think we'll win, but I can't see us losing. I thought, I've come across a bit cocky. And then at the end, I delivered some kind of sentimental message about, don't worry, Everton's a great club. They'll be back where Villa are. And I thought, probably only about 5 points above them, aren't we? Or we were. Yeah. But it sounded a bit patronising. Which was meant heartfelt to say, listen, they're going through crap times, you know, not sure about the ownership there and that kind of thing. But I thought we played very well. I thought if you put Big Dunk in charge as caretaker manager, you know what you're going to get. And I think I heard the commentator saying that he stuck some money behind the bars of some of the local pubs, which I thought was a nice gesture. But you know, that's all they're going to get from him today, I think, because Villa went there and did a proper job on them.
I would say professional is probably the word I'd use. And I think we did make hard work of it at times, and Everton have missed chances where, you know, better finish it and we draw that game or lose it. And that's like every game, isn't it? If the side takes the chances, they get some points out of it. But yeah, professional is very easy to look at how they've been this season. If it was still Benitez, you'd go there and win and you think, yeah, well, that's to be expected really in the state they're in at the moment. But you knew that the crowd were going to be right up for it. Ian Robertson there says it was like a derby, a scrappy game. It did have that feel to it. And I think Darren Fletcher on commentary said that he had a nice feel to the game. He said two or three times in the first half. But that was a good way to describe it. It felt like both sides were right up for it. And that was a potential banana skin for Villa, really. And then you five games without a win. So to go there, get the goal on a stroke half time and keep the clean sheet in the second half as well. Professional performance, I think.
Yeah, I think Goodison's brilliant for that kind of game as well. Mm. It's like proper old school ramshackle, but real kind of can get bouncy. And Villa did that had to go and compete, because that was the least that Duncan Ferguson was going to ask for Everton to show a reaction and a response. And I think, you know, it was, I mean, you mentioned it, didn't you, in the intro about Gerrard just having that little kind of little bit of cheekiness and a little bit of a, you know, I think at half time, Villa just scored on the stroke of half time, the pan close to him, didn't they? And he was staring down, you know, 5,000 Everton fans. And it's brilliant. So every bit, whatever Duncan Ferguson would have said to get the Everton players up for it pre-match, Steven Gerrard would have been able to do exactly the same and have, with respect to Big Dunk, probably have a little bit more managerial nous, tactical nous, and a better understanding of exactly what he wants from his team as well.
And in the side, more quality. We're just a better side than Everton at the moment.
Well, yeah, I think that's fair. I think until the lad Anthony Gordon came on, who I think, you know, obviously playing on adrenaline as well, being a local lad for them, it was probably till he came on that you know, he injected a bit of quality into the game. And I thought I thought the story might be written for him to come and magic something up, but fortunately that wasn't the case. But yeah, we are a better team than Everton. I think, you know, done the double over them now with two slightly different looking Villa teams, home and away. And it was, like I say, it was an all round all-round good performance. And the last 20, I think Matty Cash just been on the telly saying this much as well, they really had to dig in. He described it as doing the horrible stuff. And they did do it, and they stood up strong. Gerrard made the sensible solutions, didn't he? Taking Watkins off so that he could have a fresh pair of legs in Ings. Coutinho going off as well. I mean, I think Coutinho was pretty ineffective, to be honest, just because the ball wasn't at the feet of anybody very long.
Very thin ball, wasn't it? In there, yeah. It's very hard to keep control of possession, and you want someone who's got quality on the ball to kind of ping things around when you've got the ball. When it's a bit bitty and back and forth, Coutinho was ineffective. Was the word I was going to go for?
Yeah, agreed. And like I said, I think the changes that he made were good changes. Chukwuemeka coming on and giving a little bit more. Strength, I suppose, and helping Villa compete physically, and then throwing an extra defender on McCourtney at the end. So it was well managed. It could have been a draw, to be fair, because Villa had the best of the first half chances. Everton had the best of the second half chances, but the goal, I just thought, I keep watching it back. It was I think Darren Fletcher, the commentator, or Jake Humphries at halftime said, BT Sport have got this special app or something, or this extra thing where you can watch things from different angles. I thought, yeah, I might have a bit of that just to watch that goal from different angles, because it was quality. It was, probably the littlest man on the pitch, or one of the littlest men on the pitch. And to get the ball into the top corner from that position, the run to find space, the awareness to know kind of where the goal was in relation to him, the delivery from Lucas Digne was that was quality. It was the moment of quality, and I'm biased on the Villa fan. It was the moment of quality that deserved to win that game that was lacking in quality, really.
Yeah, but weirdly, having only watched it back, I didn't go back and watch it on BT's app a few times, but watching the match coverage, and I show it two or three times, obviously, I almost felt like the way Pickford dived was weird. Like, it was almost like he dived back, this acrobatic kind of throw a hand back to save it. Whereas it almost feels like he could have took a step back and caught it, the way it like lobbed over him. But yeah, obviously a great goal, cracking finish. And the smallest man on the pitch.
Don't underestimate Pickford's touch. That was the one that took it beyond Townsend into the top
corner. Just weird. Why is it that, because Brendy has had a couple of decent chances from headers, and you look at him and you think he's 5'8", why is 6'6" Tyrone Mings not getting on the end of stuff like that? Why is that? Do they underestimate the small guy? Does he nip around? Was that just a silly cliche?
Well, I'm glad that you raised the subject of Emi Buendia's height, because you just said he's 5'8". The chant describes him as 5'7", is football heaven. I wanted to check this out because I'm a stickler for facts.
I don't even think he's 5'7".
Well, I looked at Wiki, and so Wiki have him down as 5'8". And 1.72, so 1 meter 72 centimeters, and so the 1 meter 72 is consistent with whatever profile you look of Emi Buendia. Somebody might be able to find one from South America or whatever, but he's 1 meter 72 centimeters. But whenever I do the conversion, that comes out at 5.64. Which, surely you round that down, though. Surely is he? Or is 5'6" and a half? No. He's 5'6" and a half.
Yeah,
I don't think you can get away with saying that's 5'7". I don't want to ruin the chant.
I mean, I don't think we need to get this involved in it, to be honest. I don't think that matters that much. It's weird. Well,
I think this is what bamboozles people who are trying to mark him from corners, thinking, is he actually 5'7"?
Well, this is the thing. In the olden days, when we actually went out and spoke to people, I always used to say that I was 5'8". And I was told that to somebody once, and I was like, no, you're more like 6'4". And I said, well, I'm definitely not 6'4". Maybe I'm more like 5'10". And I measured myself, and I was 5'10". But I always said 5'8" for some reason. But then I look at Buendia and think, well, I'm way taller than him. So I'm not even sure he's 5'7" either. I'd say he's more like 5'5".
I think this is in danger of becoming a 20, 28, 29 kind of.
I love that.
I think we're in that territory.
But let's get back to the match. Sorry.
In answer to your question, I do think perhaps he wouldn't get the same attention as a six foot four defender or striker at the back post would probably stand out like a lighthouse, wouldn't it? Whereas when he doesn't get the same attention, but he's not going to score headers like that if he's challenging for the ball. You know what I mean? Nobody's going to lose a header to him like that. It's a fact. his movement.
There's that moment where he squares up with Yerry Mina, and there's a great picture in our archive system of it, and he's like, the difference is like this much. He's like literally looking up at him. So if, yeah, if they're marking against each other, he's not going to win the header over Mina, but you know, it'd be nippy, get small, move around, get a bit of space. And the one that screams to mind from players gone by is Tim Cahill as well, obviously for Everton. He was great in the end. He was only a small chap as well, so I don't know what he was. Let's not get into the specifics of that. But there must be other players who are good in the air. You don't just have to be tall.
If you look at Diogo Jota.
Yeah, Jota, yeah.
Diogo Jota at Liverpool. He scores tons of headed goals. He's not the biggest player on the pitch by any means. So it's just intelligent movement, I think.
Yeah.
I didn't think Buendia, I mean, he had a couple of chances before then, didn't he? With the usual smart movement around the edge of the box and trying his luck. I'm glad he got his reward because he's improved. Yeah. He's improved as we've gone on in the last couple of weeks. So I'm glad he's got his reward, not only scored, but scored the goal that's proven to be the winner.
I think when Gerrard first took over, we were looking at players who maybe most benefit from Gerrard's appointment. I think, you know, with the benefit of hindsight, I would say that Buendia has probably been our most improved player since Gerrard's come in, would you say?
Yeah, Buendia and Ramsey as well. I think, although, you know, Ramsey was already making himself undroppable under Dean Smith and managed to see off a lot more experienced midfielders. So I definitely think those two have seen a real improvement in the game. It's funny, again, our mate Darren Fletcher, I like what he said about Buendia, like, manages to complain with a smile on his face.
Yeah.
Which I think is quite a nice trait to have. when he squared up to Mina, it was weird because I think he was pointing to his own chest, Buendia, saying, "Oh, look, you've hurt me here." There's a little, you know, almost punny shirt saying, "You've hurt me here." And then then big Mina was saying, "Well, you've hurt me here." Like,
yeah. Let's rewind back to team news. We always talk through it about 10 minutes into the podcast and we're going back to before the game's even kicked off. But yeah, go back to half 11. Is that our best 11, do you think, that side that we started with there?
I think it's the one I'd have picked. I don't know whether that makes it the best 11 because I'd have picked it, but it was the obvious one, I don't suppose, because Gerrard can do as he pleases and he'll make changes where he sees fit. But I think so. I'm just trying to think how it all panned out. Most of the players played well, didn't they? I think. I think Watkins sometimes needs to be a little bit more clinical in terms of the way he passes the ball. But worked hard and worked better without Ings. It's hard to judge it, isn't it? I'd like to see what that team does at Villa Park, where the ball's on the deck a little bit more, and Villa can actually try and take control of a game. It was never going to be a game that they were going to seize control over. They just had to compete, really. But I think it probably is. We don't know the way Villa are signing players. It certainly is this week. By the time we play again in a couple of weeks' time, I don't know, but. Yeah, it looks strong. Don't see any obvious weaknesses in that team right now.
There's a comment here that says, "Not our best 11, starting 11, no, from Dean Smith." Not the Dean Smith, I wouldn't have thought. But if it is, hi, Dean. Thanks for watching. I'm intrigued to see if people are watching, whether they're live or otherwise. I would like to see what is your best starting 11 if you were manager. Because somebody, I tweeted that saying, "I think this is our best 11." And someone said, "What about Bailey?" And yeah, spent £30-odd million only on Bailey, and to be honest, I've said before, he's almost like a figment of my imagination, to be honest. Does he play for us? I've seen him in dribs and drabs. The last time was Everton, when is the last notable thing.
Yeah. Let's qualify it. It's our best, in my opinion, it's our best available 11.
And in the system you play in, I don't know where Bailey goes. I don't know where Bailey does come into that and just start straight away. So as it stands, Coutinho and Buendia are the 10s, aren't they? I suppose the contentious one that you would change if you were changing one of those at the moment is Coutinho, and it's mad to say that, oh yeah, let's drop Coutinho, who's just come in as this star player. But yeah, not his best performance of the day, and I think still getting up to speed, isn't he? So I'm not going to judge him too harshly, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, it's one of those games. I think he had a headed chance as well, didn't he, that went close. That's probably his brightest moment. It's probably his first, you know, it definitely is his first start with Aston Villa after a brief cameo last week. So I think he's going to take a little bit of time to get him up to the pace of the Premier League again. And B, it was just frenetic, wasn't he? It was just, I don't know, I expect Gerrard, you know, making sure, you know, as long as everybody's fit and available to play the same team next time out. When is it? It's miles away, isn't it?
It's something like 16 days. It's Leeds on like the 9th of February. It's a midweek. It's on BT again, isn't it? They were plugging it throughout the game. So it's Leeds and then... I think it is on a Saturday. Newcastle, yeah. So, yeah, again, I think we looked at this little period as an opportunity for points, didn't we? And you've got to build on that performance now, even though it is 16 days away. I think Gerrard said that they're going to do like a mini pre-season and play a couple of games behind closed doors. You've got to build on that momentum now and try and get this 11, you know, gelling together and everyone fit and up to speed.
Well, yeah, you'd expect us. And again, I don't want to suddenly start getting carried away because we've won a game, but you'd expect us to fancy ourselves to get 4 points minimum, wouldn't you, from the next two games? That's been funny, but Villa, we can be demanding as a fan base, but I think that almost the way the owners and Gerrard have acted in this transfer window are almost encouraging us. You know, they're demanding as well. So 4 points from, you know, I mean, the Leeds, I know we're getting ahead of ourselves and we'll speak about this nearer the time, but I feel we owe Leeds one at Villa Park, really. How did we get it? I've got the Bamford hat-trick. Was that last season or the season before? I'm getting it blurred.
It was behind closed doors, wasn't it? I think. A couple of the best 11s are coming in and people are saying to play a two midfield of Luiz and McGinn. Brendier is a 10, Bailey on the right, Watkins on the left and Ings up front, or Coutinho in the middle, Brendier outright, Bailey on the other side and Watkins up front. There is options there, and I suppose that's what having a good squad is, isn't it? Being able to chop and change it. But James says, why would you drop Coutinho? Drop Ramsey. Put Coutinho in the middle and drop Ramsey to the bench. And then other people will say, you can't drop Ramsey. So it's not a great job, isn't it, being a football manager.
We've said before, haven't we, about having, you don't need to shoehorn Watkins and Ings in the team. Having one on the pitch and one on the bench is a good option. I don't see why that can't be the same. You know, we've spoken, haven't we, about progress year on year being the, you know, three or four of your players that have been regular starters one season, then becoming your bench players the next season. So to me, Leon Bailey, listen, the jury's out, but you would think, given what he's done in Germany and the fanfare that greeted him and the couple of glimpses that we've had, you would think he would be an upgrade. You know, last season, who was starting in our wide areas? Traore, El Ghazi a little bit.
Yeah.
Is Coutinho an upgrade on those? Yes. You know, and who was on the bench? Trezeguet, El Ghazi. Is Bailey an upgrade on those? We'll have to wait and see, won't we, when he finally gets fit?
But probably yes. Yeah, well, I think that, yeah,
think we'll so, wait yes,
and see. You'd assume so, yeah.
Yeah.
Just the conversation, what we started with, saying about, you know, kind of the levels between Villa and Everton now, I think that the most recent transfer business sums it up, that we go and sign one of their most talented players, one of their most saleable assets in Dina for 25 million, and we ship out El Ghazi, who's effectively, you know, an off-cast for us building a better side, and he goes out there on loan for the rest of the season, and that's probably the levels between the two, isn't it? And you've only got to think back, what year are we now, 2022, so 4 years or whatever, of being in the Championship and thinking, oh, we're miles behind the likes of Everton. And now we're ahead of them and making strides to keep making that gap further.
Yeah, you're right. No, you are right. It's interesting, you know. I feel really harsh about this because El Ghazi has a special place in our hearts for what he's done for us. You know, obviously that afternoon at May against Derby County will be the one. But even despite then, he scored, and I know a lot of them come from the penalty spot, but he scored a lot of goals for us, really, for a wide player.
Yeah, he's got 10 last season, didn't he, I think?
Back in the Premier League. So, but yeah, it's interesting that he's no longer... And there'll be a few people who fall by the wayside in this journey if we do get to somewhere near where we want to get to. But it's El Ghazi's one of those. So as much as to me that is a sign of Aston Villa on the up and going places, the place where he's ended up is a sign of a club in decline as well. Because to me, El Ghazi is a top half of Championship, bottom half of the Premier League level player, which I suppose is about right because Everton are bottom half of the Premier League and Aston Villa have marched into the top half with a victory at Goodison Park, even if only for a couple of hours.
Is it 10th we are higher than that?
Yeah, good.
Let's talk about Ollie Watkins then. This is again just the debate that happens every single week, and it's not whether him and Ings should work together in the same team. It's whether it's now time to drop Watkins and stick Ings in there from the start. A couple of comments earlier on when we started said that there's a couple of lazy performances from Watkins now and he doesn't seem too interested. I'm not quite sure whether I agree with that. There was that one little chance he had that just sprung to mind where he brings the ball down, spins round, and I think he gets a shot away. Again, got through early on that ball that Mina didn't head away or let bounce, and he gets off the back of that. But yeah, Watkins isn't the Ollie Watkins of last season. And for all his work, right, if a striker isn't scoring goals, they're at risk of being dropped, aren't they?
Yeah, it's just a little bit of aggression for me, really, from Watkins, because I think we know he's quick, we know technically he's a good player. I think he can almost flip from one week to the next how good he is at protecting the ball and how good he is at bringing people around him. But I'd stick with him. I would. I'd give him a run of four or five, six games in the team, getting used to playing alongside Coutinho, getting used to playing alongside, you know, the new and improved Buendia, and see what he can do. Because I still think probably, you know, I know Gerrard's doing business that he wants Villa to go places quickly, but I still think we're going to need one eye on the longer-term project as well. And I think Ollie Watkins is probably going to be, well, he's going to be more central to that than Danny Ings is. So I think, to me, Watkins is your starter. Maybe judge him after five or six games in this system and then decide if he's not doing the business, if he's not scoring enough goals, if he's not creating enough goals. You've got a brilliant alternative on the bench. But I don't like giving up. I know people aren't saying give up on him just by taking him out of the team for a game or two, but I don't like giving up on players that early. I think we've got to give him a chance to play his way back into form a little bit as well.
I'm going to read a couple of comments. Christopher says, Watkins' problem is that he's too nice. He just needs to have a nasty side to his game. Ian says that he wasn't at his best. Dean Smith says, no, Watkins lost. That'll always be funny, won't it? Watkins lost the ball the most today. He's lacking what we need. It's costing us up front. And Keith says to me, Ollie Watkins doesn't seem as sharp as he was since playing for England. And finally, Steve says he spends too much time outside the box. And that is the trade-off, isn't it? If you want him to be involved in the play and help create chances, he's not going to be the man in the middle of the box to stick it in when the chance does come. And the flip side of that is that Danny Ings will be in the box when the chance comes. But if it's not, you know, the team isn't clicking because Danny Ings is just isolated away from it, the chance doesn't come in the first place. So I think Ash said a few podcasts ago, meld them together and you've got the perfect player. That perfect player doesn't exist. And I think, like you said, the long-term future, if Watkins sticks around and doesn't attract interest from somewhere else, is that Watkins is the one, isn't it? Just from the fact that he's younger than Danny Ings.
I think so. And I think, you know, you're right. Watkins does a lot of his work outside the box. But again, that's what helps keep the team ticking. So it's hard to, you know, he can't get on the end of his own crosses. He can't get, you know what I mean? That is the issue. I thought he did quite well with that. Well, he didn't go do well because he put it wide, but that opportunity, there wasn't a great deal of space to manoeuvre. I do think Pickford took him out a little bit. I'm not sure whether...
Yeah, I was going to say, was that a penalty shout? I think when I watched it in real time, I thought penalty, and then the replay, he was kind of on his way down before the contact came, I think, and there wasn't too much complaining about it, but...
Yeah, I think he was sliding anyway to reach... That. Yeah, he was sliding onto the floor to reach the chance anyway, which he'd set up for himself with a neat first touch. So I wouldn't have liked seeing that penalty given against us. I think it had been a bit harsh. But so there was that moment, wasn't there? There was a moment at the start of the second half where he's escaped down the right, and I think he's just put it behind Coutinho, is it? Coutinho in front of Ramsey. I'd like to see four or five matches with that front three to see what they can do. And you've got the option if none of them are performing particularly well after an hour, you can bring Ings on and change it around that way. And then if Ings comes on for the last half hour and grabs it by the scruff of the neck, you put him in the next game, don't you? But I don't think Watkins has done enough wrong yet, or Ings has done. You know, it's a weird one, isn't it? Because you can say, well, hang on. What Ings hasn't done any worse or better than Watkins. Why don't you start with him? But I think you've got to decide which one and give them a chance to play themselves into form.
Obviously, it's Leeds up next, and it is 16 days away, I think, and, you know, bearing on injuries and stuff and those little mini pre-season games and all that kind of thing. Do you think Watkins is more benefited to playing against Leeds in terms of the work rate and stuff and being pressing their back against Leeds. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so. They're an energetic team, aren't they? So if we can try and press them higher up the pitch and not give them too much of our territory, that's a good starting point. Seems like miles away. Well, it is miles away, to be honest. So I'm gonna savour and bask in this, I think, for a week or so anyway.
Yeah, weirdly, I thought it was the away game, the rearranged game. They'd been slotted in for that midweek, and I realised it was a full midweek round of fixtures and it was at home, so I've completely been thrown off. I mean, the second half today, was saying just before we came on air, my girlfriend's family came round, literally as the second half was kicking off, and she answered the door and they came in, and I was just like, obviously being polite and everything, but I was watching this, I've got work to do, blah, blah, blah. Just turn the volume down and sit there and people talking and stuff, and I feel like I'm not really took any notice of the second half.
You're just too polite as a potential future son-in-law. Not rushing.
What would you done if that happens? You just go, I'd go in the kitchen. I'm watching the football.
Yeah, but me and my wife, bearing in mind I'm early to mid-40s now, me and my wife have been together on and off since we were about 14, 15. So my in-laws know exactly what I'm like there. You know, I've had times in the past, I won't bore you with all the family history, but times in the past where we've been around their house, particularly for, I don't know, a meal or to wider family are coming around and that kind of stuff. And I've been, this probably when I was actually grafting as a journalist, but I've had to disappear for like 3 hours to take work phone calls and stuff like that. So they know if I'm in a social mood, yes, I'm the life and soul of the party. But if it's something Aston Villa related that is more important, you've got to put your feet down, mate. You've got to set that early. Or shut the curtains when they knock on the door, then you're not in.
Her mum rang and she came in and she said, oh, they're going to pop round. Is that all right? I said, yeah, it's fine, but I'm still watching the football. Like, for the second half's about to start. Like, I'm not going to give up now. And then when they came, I said, oh, are you working? And I said, yeah, I've got my laptop down there. I'm working, doing something. Right, what else do we want to talk about? I think that's pretty much it. Do you want to talk about the Dean stuff and the celebration, the bottles being thrown and all that? Do you not want to mention it?
Yeah, we can talk about it. It's
a disgrace, isn't it? Really? I don't know what else does that?
It's out of order, isn't it? You know, and I don't know exactly who. I mean, Matty Cash and Luke Dean both went down being struck by something. I don't know exactly what's hit them. I presume it was a plastic bottle with a lid on, you know, done the old stick the lid in your sock when you searched on your way in and something like that. It's just, and it's a fairly close ground as well, Goodison. And I don't think, well, they weren't trying to taunt the home fans or whatever. They were just celebrating. That's where the ball had been delivered from. So that's where they went to celebrate. It's just nonsense. And, you know, we all get fed up and frustrated, but why would you throw something at somebody? I don't get it.
I mean, if I was sat in the low hold and somebody scores up that end, three sides of the ground, up that side are the home fans. That's usually the case, that you're going to be celebrating in front of home fans at some point. Yeah. I've never ever thought, oh, I'm going to chuck this bottle at somebody. Yeah. You know, people say when things like this happen.
Not big levies, ain't you?
Yeah, stuff like that. But people say when things like this happen, like, oh, yeah, you know, they're not proper football fans. They're, you know, that's just a minority. No, they are proper football fans. They're wearing the shirt like everybody else. They pay their money to come to the game and they do stupid things like that. My first thought when I was watching on TV is that Dean and Cash had clashed heads celebrating, is what I first thought, because that's. I didn't think of something like a bottle being thrown because I just assumed better of people not to do something like that. I thought they'd celebrate and whack their heads together. But for them both to be hit by a coin or a bottle or whatever it might have been, a missile, I think Sky Sports scored it. Just a joke, disgrace. And then there was a picture that Ash posted of it and there's like fans in the background like laughing and jeering and stuff. So people say, oh, it's, you know, it's only one guy throwing stuff, but people around it are laughing and joking. So scum.
Yeah, listen. It's
and there'll be Everton fans that stumble upon this. I know they're not all like it. It wasn't the whole stadium and blah, 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 blah. But those people that were involved in that, it's cool.
Yeah, but if it was Villa fans that were doing that at Villa Park, we'd call them out as well, wouldn't we? Because there's just no need for it.
Exactly.
Every club's got the more than their fair share of idiots, sadly.
Yeah. Don't know what else to talk about. I think that's probably pretty much the last thing. Is there anything else you wanted to mention? Any other players specifically you wanted to go through? Ming's performance, maybe. There's a few comments about him, like always. His performance, there's a couple of sloppy moments, but overall did okay, I think.
Who was that, sorry?
Tyrone Mings.
Yeah, a couple of passes out of play and a couple of,
I mean, if they'd scored from that corner, rolled it out, very different story.
You could just see what would be trending on Twitter, couldn't you? You could just see it coming, but fortunately it was dealt with. I made the only note that we haven't discussed that I've made, and it's just me.
You've made notes?
Well, not. I just jot things down, and there's no real reason to mention this other than it amused me because I'm a child. Just towards the end, when we were trying to see out the game, and it's probably because he's ex-Blues, actually, but Damari Gray tried to get a ball across down the left, ended up playing a 1-2 off his own head, and it just amused me. I don't know whether you saw it. You might have been passing around the Custer Cruise by then to the in-laws, but he just kind of whacked the ball, and it bobbled up and hit him straight in the face, and it just amused me. But like I said, that's because I'm a juvenile idiot. But no, it was a very, very impressive, very needed and welcome 3 points, to be honest.
Yeah, I think needed more so than good. I don't think it was a particularly brilliant game of football. I think it was, like somebody said earlier, it had that kind of derby feel to it for some reason, that kind of high energy atmosphere, that kind of stuff. Important not to slip up there, though, and let that get on top of you and give away a silly mistake, and Everton, you know, bounce back in the second half. Professional, get the job done. Take the 3 points back to Birmingham and move on to the next game. And that's what Villa haven't done for a long time.
Well, yeah, and a very welcome clean sheet for Emi Martinez, who has signed a new contract and said he wants to win the Champions League by the end of it. So,
no pressure on then. just quickly on that, that's a big deal, isn't it? That new deal to sign a keeper that's genuinely world class and one of the best in the league, to sign him up for another 5 years, 5.5 years, that's a big statement from Villa.
Definitely, yeah. I think it's weird, you know, because I don't want to be the world's biggest cynic, but will Gerrard be here for the length of that? That's an interesting thing, but whether he is or not, to pin down probably one of the best two or three goalkeepers in the Premier League for that length of time, for the prime of his career, shows that whatever they're selling our players as a project, people are really starting to believe in. Have you heard the Emi Martinez chant that they were singing today?
If it was in the second half, no.
Hang on, I don't think it's... Our number one.
What was that middle bit after his name? He signed forever or something, was it?
Yeah, he signed for Villa. He signed forever, I think.
Good. That's all right. Yeah, I don't mind that.
So I enjoyed that. It's a good effort, that is. So whoever's sharing that video, sorry, I better... credit to Dave, by the way, shared that on Twitter. So loving your work, Dave. That's brilliant. I'll try and join in on that.
Message Dave and see if we can nick it and stick it on Facebook. That's what we do with everything else. Claret shorts. Big fan of that. Yeah, you're not a fan.
No. I need a bit of white short action in there.
We've played it in it a few times, and I don't think we tend to win because I always seem to remember making a point of tweeting about it. Cause I like it, and then we lose, and I always think, oh, let's ditch that. It feels like that's the first time we've won in full claret.
How many shirts did Jacob Ramsey get through? 3 on it.
yeah, bizarre. That shirt.
They are made. They're not the same as the replica shirts, are they? Because our mate Darren on the commentary was saying, you know, you think for how expensive they are, they'd be a bit more. Mm. But I think they're made different, aren't they? So that the fabric's looser and more breathable, I believe. Have to get your kit man back on and let us know.
You say that, though, but I don't know who it was, the Everton player, but he's pulled onto him to try and not fall over, hasn't he? Yeah. And the weight of a grown man pulling on his shirt that hard, he's going to rip it, isn't it? It's not like he's just tugged in. Whatever. Weirdly, another stupid point, I quite like it when two teams play in their home kits. I don't know why. I don't know how I explain that. It's just that seeing Villa in claret and blue is what you expect. Seeing Everton in blue is what you expect. So seeing them both play each other in their home kit just is aesthetically pleasing to me for some reason.
It's all just a commercial rip-off anyway, isn't it? Let's face it. They could just wear bibs, couldn't they? The away team could just wear bibs or wear skins or whatever. You know, so just a rip-off. Anyway,
I'm end it now. We should have ended it 5 minutes ago. Yeah, so thank you, everyone, for sticking with us. Thank you, Matt, for your time as always. I don't know what we're doing now in terms of content, because obviously we don't play for 2 weeks. So there'll be something transfer related stuff, transfer deadline day, that kind of thing. So subscribe to the channel, put your notifications on, all that kind of stuff, and you'll see what we're posting and when we post it. And we'll catch you again soon.
Thank you for listening to Claret and Blue, an Aston Villa podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, then please do let us know. We love hearing your feedback. We'll be back soon with another episode, but until then, up the Villa.